This is a Holden Forum on Memorial Day. And it's taking place on Memorial Day, 28th of May, 1984. Since it's the first of our season here, I hope that you don't mind if I just say a couple of things about the forum format that we use here at Holden and ask you to follow that. It's really an opportunity that is focused mostly on an exchange of ideas on a matter of concern to some of the folks, a matter of common concern. And it's the usual pattern is that someone or two people, this evening will be two, will say a few things about the subject at hand, and then the folks are invited to respond to that with questions and comments and disagreements, agreements, or whatever else it may be. And sometimes it's hard to know where the discussion will go in any given time, and there aren't any big rules that it has to go in a certain direction, nor is there any desire or purpose that at the end we'll be at a certain place and decide, well, now we have resolved something, or take a vote, or anything like that. It's really the exchange of the idea is the point. And it might be we're all in the same place later on, it might be we're in three different places than we ever were before, or we may be where we were before and other people are still where they are. But that's okay, that's just part of it. Isn't it a goal to try to get consensus? I try to remember the kinds of forums I've heard or been a part of over the period of time, and I didn't spend a lot of time at this, but I remember ones on the church's healing ministry, on singles, just singles in general, that could have been singles in church too, on homosexuality, on economics, church and divorced persons, fundamentalism in the church. We had one night of nostalgia in which we just did all kinds of old films and radio kids shows, you know, Little Orphan Annie, all that kind of stuff, and just spent a whole evening just doing that and laughing like everything. One night we told old jokes. The older the better, and they usually were worse. did one on liberal religion, on sex education, Vietnam War, ethics, whole range of kinds of things. They usually are led by the village philosopher, who's part of our teaching staff, and we don't have one with us yet, who sits around, she or he sit around during the week looking for things to get at. And if people seem to be disagreeing about something, that's usually something he'll bring here she or he'll bring in to do it, or just to toss something up in the air. Maybe it's a dull week, or maybe it's too heavy a week, and so you tell old jokes or whatever it is. So there's a different style to it. What we have found to be fairly helpful is that the people who lead off are to be brief. I'll get to that being brief soon. And then it is opened up for your statements, comments, opinions. And that we're going to close at a time, and it's agreed with you, we'll say 9:15, that no matter where we are, we're going to just say that's the end of the forum for this evening. If people want to stay around and continue to talk, you may. But if we set that time later on, it's going to sound like somebody's speaking, we don't want them to speak. So we'll say it in advance. 9:15, and I'll try to watch the watch. If you see me not watching it, you can wave at me about it. And then if you speak in it, we ask that you wait till some other people have a chance to speak before you speak again, so that it doesn't, you know, just become one person. And then we ask you to take responsibility for your own statements rather than saying, you know, like everybody knows that this and this is, or this is really true. If you can say, I think, or I believe, or I feel, or something, that allows the person next to you to say, well, I think and I believe something quite different without having to seem to be attacking your statement. You can disagree like mad, but you don't. That's a one helpful way of letting your statement be for yourself, and you take responsibility for it. And then we do ask that you, rather than getting into dialogues between two of you, you would feed the comments up here, and we'll point to folks so that we can keep it going, and that keeps everybody involved in it. Is that fair enough of a way of going about it? Well, we're going to talk about Memorial Day, and Jim's going to lead off and say some things. Is that all right?
Sure, I guess. I guess I'm going to talk very briefly about Memorial Day in the broader context of patriotism, and maybe verbalize some things that we know intuitively or that we've taken for granted, and that legitimacy is a very important function that we all have in terms of supporting our government. And there are various ways of showing this legitimacy or legitimizing our government. There's things like elections and parades and national holidays like Memorial Day. And these types of legitimizing institutions can be forced or they can be voluntary. You know, I'm sure you can think of various examples of each, you know, forced where, you know, your name is on an election roll and if you don't vote, you're visited there in the middle of the night, you know, involuntary, as in our voluntary armed forces right now. But all these ways of showing our legitimization are our showing of support for the government. That's what we call patriotism. And I think there are some key questions concerning legitimacy for thinking Christians. And one of them is, must we totally legitimize our government, or can we just must we totally repudiate it? Is there any middle ground? You know, how do you support it partially? It's a very difficult type of thing in terms of our legitimizing institutions. And then, how do we keep the things that we want to legitimize without legitimizing the things we don't want to keep? It's very related. And also, I think it's important that we keep in mind that patriotism is not just a romantic notion, but that it has real consequences through its legitimizing power, that it's not just something that's esoteric out there, that how we carry out our patriotic feelings through these legitimizing institutions has a real effect on what happens, both within our country and also with it between countries. And I think that if we keep that in mind throughout the discussion tonight, it might be helpful. That's it.
Okay, Jim. I should have let off because I think his is closer to what you want to talk about than what I'm prepared to say. Mine is a little more background leading up to that same kind of question, but I'll sneak it in anyway. Some of the things I'm seeing comes out of a study that my son did at college on Memorial Days. I happened to bump into it in my files, and so I'm quoting from some of that. I'm not trying to escape it. I'll take responsibility for what I say because I think he did fairly good work where I'm quoting him, but the rest of it just stirs it up. Began right after the Civil War, some argument about where, some about five or six states take credit for it, but it was 1868 when the Grand Army of the Republic, the general of the Grand Army of the Republic, called for this day and this date of May 28th to be observed, or May 30th it was at that time, to be observed as a Decoration Day. And it was to decorate the graves. It was to strew flowers, and all the statement was all made. And then it was some years later, 10, 12, maybe 20 years later, that it was called Memorial Day, and then still focused on the people who had died in the Civil War. Can't figure out why May 30th, except that the last Union soldier had died on May 30th, and that may have been why it came. So it was really sponsored by the military. I mean, the people who had been in the military to remember the people who had died. When less and less of them were around, then it became tougher to do, and attendance and participation just about disappeared until civic groups began to pick it up. And instead of being honoring the dead, it was honoring the living. The remaining Civil War soldiers were the focus of it. And it wasn't dealing anymore with people who had died. And then it was picked up in World War I by the American Legion to be in honor of those who had died in World War I. And a whole period of time then followed that. I'll skip faster through than I was going to do and just say that it had a surge, and it was usually, sometimes there were 100,000 people participating, especially in Washington, D.C., and especially around the time when they did the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. And that struck me because I'd read that. And just before I came over here, I stopped and picked out the Seattle Post-Intelligence. And they are today, they did today, honor a Vietnam veteran, an unknown soldier, was placed in the tomb today, going back in that whole cycle. And it was difficult, I don't know if you realize, the reason they had to do it only today, they couldn't find an unknown soldier. We are so good at identifying bodies now that it took this long to be sure they had an unknown soldier. And that person was placed in the tomb today. And the statement, well, I'll read that after a while when I get back to that. Then, more recently then, there was a pulling away, and especially the Memorial Day thing really became a weekend, and sport and athletic events, sports events. Vacation time, a day off, a holiday. And almost no connection anymore between what they talked about first, which was remembering the dead. And then the alternate theme was that if you really remembered the dead, you'd really get plugged in to what's going on now, meaning the living. And so the transfer from you died for your country to it was a great cause for which you died for your country to anybody ought to be, or everybody ought to be, willing to die for your country. And so patriotism was then projected from giving thanks for somebody who had done it to the point of saying really everybody ought to be willing to do it. And of course during Vietnam there was a lot of questions about that, whether that should be done, and what President Reagan was said about today about the person who was placed there picks up that whole theme, it seemed to me. It was interesting to find this quote. We may not know of this man's life, but we know of his character. We may not know of his name, but we know his courage. He is the heart, the soul, and the spirit of America. Now, that may or may not be true. There were a lot of people in Vietnam who didn't want to be there. So it may not really be true, but what the president, as many presidents, most presidents have said before him, I'm not trying to pick on President Reagan by any means, these are quotes you get from most of the presidents, that is used to say that this person knew why he was there and was boldly in favor of it. He wasn't so much conscripted or sent, but he was really there because it was a good cause and everybody ought to just about be willing to do the same. The question that religious folks, and that's what Jim was getting at, have then, does that become sort of another kind of religious life? Clergy are almost always involved in Memorial Day services, chaplains or local clergy. Much of it is words about not only freedom in terms of the government, but freedom of human individuals and freedom of the spirit, the soul of people. And so it gets very close to a religious kind of thought. And of course, because it has to do with death, some people have said the reason Memorial Days have dissipated, the participation and attention to it, is that everybody knows very well what it's about, but doesn't want to deal with it because it has to do with death. And we have never liked that subject. And it has to do with our country on whether it's always right or not, which is what Jim was bringing up. Enough. So if people would like to respond and comment and question or whatever.
When I was speaking in that context, I wasn't speaking of Memorial Day itself. I mean, I'm not against a, I mean, this is just my own views. I'm not against a, you know, a holiday to commemorate our dead. But that is not to say that I think that the conflict comes, why, when we legitimize through our parades or whatever on Memorial Day, our country's action, it extends more than just the soldiers of World War II. You know, I mean, it extends to a full-fledged support of our country. I mean, that's just the nature of these institutions. Mm-hmm. You know, and do we want to do that? You know, and the thing is, you know, I don't want to not support it at all. I mean, there's some very good things, but I don't want to support everything. I mean, I don't want to support our role in Chile. You know, the CIA's role in Chile. You know, and I mean, there's, you know, and how do you do that? I mean, do you just not legitimize it at all by, you know, refusing to partake in Memorial Day celebrations? I mean, that seems a little drastic to me. But then again, if I do, am I giving my acquiescence to it?
Seems like you ought to find some other way. I can't see too much a connection of not supporting Memorial Day because it would be in Chile.
Well, if it's a military action, I guess my feelings are is that was a military action, and I'm supporting in Memorial Day as a military holiday.
I think part of one thing that's I can see the connection in there is that what President Reagan said, that quote, that's you know, it stirs up a lot of feelings, a lot of emotion, a lot of support in America for general policy. I think your support of Memorial Day maybe has to vary over the years. I think after World War II, it was probably a very valid institution. After the Civil War, when people were actually remembering the war dead and actually remembering their families. But I would think that now for me, Memorial Day means that we're supporting a militaristic government that goes into Chile, that goes into El Salvador, that invades and attacks Nicaragua. And I can't go along with those actions. I don't think I could live with my conscience if I would celebrate Memorial Day, you know, the world like this.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you approve of the communists being in Nicaragua?
No, I don't think it's a communist in Nicaragua.
Oh.
I have a lot of friends who have gone there and who have just opposite opinions of what the press.
Again, the point would be not to get in a conversation with her.
Okay.
If you talk to me, that'll be fine. I mean, you can express, don't ask her what she believes, but tell us what you believe, and that'll be fine.
See, that's exactly what he said when Castro took over Cuba.
Now, wait, who said that?
In the United States, they called him George Washington of Cuba.
Okay.
And, of course, they didn't know what was going on.
You believe that they didn't know what was going on? That's your statement, right?
That's right, because I know a man who...
Sure.
Who,
all I'm trying to get you to say is that yours, it's your Castro. Opinion. That's all I'm trying to get you to say.
Okay. I know a man that went all through school with Castro. And he was the first one Castro threw in prison. And he lived next door to me in the United States when he started.
Sure.
So I know exactly what was going on in Cuba at the time.
Well, I guess I have to state that I don't believe anybody knows what was going on, especially next door neighbors didn't. That's my opinion. But you have every right to say that's what you believe about it, just as she has every right to say that's what she believes about it. Yeah. I think it's very difficult for us to know my opinion. Again, my statement, not as moderator. It's very difficult to know what's going on in other countries. It is so difficult. Just as it's very difficult to know what's going on in our country at times. And that's why that's what some of the upsetness is. If we don't know what's going on in some of the places, it seems to me, that's what causes, where do you have the chance to disagree? Not to say, our country's terrible, let's get rid of it, by any means. But how do you get a chance to say that I disagree with what they're doing down there? I wish they would stop that. I wish they would keep doing this or whatever else it may be. And I think that's what I hear some people saying.
And it is not just how do I show my disagreement or my displeasure, but how do I avoid legitimizing it? How do I avoid, you know, without meaning to, supporting them?
Well, I think we have a democratic government, and you can really do quite a bit if you get a group together and write to your senators and representatives. And you get enough people to write letters, they'll pay attention to it.
Certainly.
And I know it works because we do it.
Certainly, but that, I guess my response or my opinion on that would be that that doesn't affect how I support Memorial Day, what Congress does.
Okay. I guess, again, I'm asking you to talk to me. I'm going to be moderator now. I won't take any more comments. I'll just be moderator. It's easier that way, okay? I made statements. I won't make any more statements. So I'll just ask you to talk to me, but I would hope that you would keep talking.
How would we know the way we feel is the correct way? How can you not let the government do what the government did, then find out whether it's the right way? Look what Chamberlain did in World War II. Everybody thought it was the right way, and if he hadn't done that, World War II probably wouldn't have started.
That's a key question of, you know, of
okay, he didn't address that to you. He addressed that to me.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Because, see, if we don't let them go through with what they're doing, how are we going to... You can't say, well, you're doing the wrong thing, or you're doing the right thing until it's over with. You can't tell what history is going to be until it's over with.
Somebody else have a comment related to that?
One of the things that I have a problem with sometimes is what ends up to be lumping together support of God and country. Mm-hmm. And yes, you know, we elect our officials, and by electing them, we support them, or by writing letters or doing whatever, we let them know how we feel, but it is our responsibility to make informed decisions and informed choices. And I think what the person said about, you know, how do we know, or, you know, we don't know what history is about until it's over, that's true to a point. You know, we don't know until later, but we need to make informed decisions along the way and alter our, I believe, I need to alter my views according to what I see as being right. And collectively, if we do that, perhaps we can stay more on target. But getting back, I just have a real problem with, in quote, patriotic music, where, or in speeches where things sometimes come across as being, you know, do this for God and your country. Well, I tend to think sometimes that those two things might be very much opposed. So I have to constantly define that for myself.
Okay. Somebody else? Comment?
Yeah. We came in late, so I didn't catch the beginning, but I guess I have a little bit of a defensiveness in maybe hearing some of the saying I'm not excited about Memorial Day thing, because even though we don't agree with all the policies or whatever, I think we have that right. But I also think we need to respect our past. I think we need to respect, my father was in World War II, I have great uncles who were in World War I, and many of my father's friends were killed in World War II. I mean, those people. And even the Vietnam War, I mean, even though today we can look at it and say it was a mistake, people went over there in good faith, and they came back and were literally shunned. And that was years of their lives, that was a segment of their life, and to say that was a mistake, that was degrading, is real demoralizing for that person who's coming back. And I think you need to show a certain amount of respect. Do you see what I'm saying?
I think what you're saying is quite clear. Okay. Or maybe somebody doesn't think so. Someone else. Thank you.
Psychology will tell us that no value is totally good or totally bad. And I think that patriotism is definitely a value, and that to hold it up as a totally good value can cause a lot of problems. And to hold it up totally good means that I have to believe my government is totally good, so I have to support police actions in places I don't believe in. But to hold it up as totally bad means I can't believe in, I don't know, public aid and those kinds of things too. So I think we need to, as individuals, find out what we stand for and what we stand against. And and I can stand for in good conscience celebrating Memorial Day and feeling right about remembering the dead and what they as individuals represent, and then find ways that are significant to oppose actions in which I'm opposed to.
Okay, thank you. Someone else?
I think the emphasis is always seems to be on the military aspect, that is a problem for a lot of people. I don't think that, as she says, we shouldn't ignore the sacrifices that people have made in the past, and I think we should honor them, but we don't seem to honor anybody else except the military. We remember our own families and friends, but the emphasis always seems to be on the military and as an excuse for stirring up strong feelings in support of the military. And perhaps what we need to do is alongside of the people who have given their lives in wars, is to honor people who have attempted to resolve conflicts peacefully and look for other means than just military measures to contribute to peace and to the support of our country. And that seems to be the element that seems to be lacking, and when all of the military music is played, it, the total emphasis on the military.
Thank you. Somebody else?
Well, to have it towards the military is a common cause. If everybody does it just for their relatives and thing, that's not a common cause. And if you want to get something going, you almost have to have a common cause if you're going to do it for the whole United States.
No, what I simply meant is that...
I was hoping he was talking to me. If you want to say something further about yours, I just assume that you're not getting a dialogue with him. That can be just as effective by just making a statement if you want to. And you certainly may, unless there's somebody else who wants to speak right now. Go ahead. If you'd like to say something that clarifies your point of view.
Well, I just wanted to emphasize that people can be patriotic in other ways than just the military.
Okay. Someone else?
Well, Memorial Day was started to honor those who had given so much for our country, and if they hadn't, we wouldn't have what we've got today. And as far as the parades and so on are concerned, a good share of those people also gave very much, but they still have their lives and have come back, and they want to honor their comrades who fell in getting this freedom for us and what we have. And I don't know why it needs to be associated with all the other things, militarily or whatever way in other countries and our, even what we're connected with. This, to me, is just simply to honor those who have given their lives, and, well, there's a lot of them that they also honor that did come back and have died since, but nevertheless, it's showing respect for those that gave so much for us.
Just a point of information that I found in a study, that's not what's happened in most Memorial Day celebrations. It hasn't stayed at what you perceive it to be. That has been changed to be something else, and that's where some of the questions come up that I hear being raised. In other words, I just had the advantage of looking at these studies that were made where they studied the speeches in same towns and then in just on other towns, and the speeches by presidents and other things, that there was a shift over the period of the years from what you were saying to something different in the celebrations themselves. Now, maybe in your hometown it remained the same, I don't know, but apparently it has changed elsewhere, and I think that's what's causing some of the questions too. It isn't simply what you described. I think a lot of people probably wouldn't have trouble with that. But now it's a comment of my own. But the history is that it has changed.
Well, I know that there are various groups that are trying to get connected with it and bring in other things. That I know.
Could be.
Well, in a free society like ours, I don't think you could
You know, they can't make a rule that you have to do this on the final day.
True.
It's
voluntary.
It's part of our free society that nobody wants to give up.
Someone else?
Just so it doesn't become impersonal, I think one of the things that scares me the most are the Atari games where whole galaxies are destroyed to the tune of millions and millions of points. And that's basically the way our defense system is set up. It's the same Atari game in the basements of the Middle West. And I think as bad as war has always been, at least in the old days, if you were killing someone, you were looking them in the eye, and it was a personal thing. And at least there was some deference given to one warrior to another warrior. And I think the farther down the line we go, the more impersonal it's becoming. And it really does become body counts and just sheer numbers and statistics.
Thank you. Someone else want to respond to that or something of your own?
I'm listening to what she said and just thinking. I see that in when you're talking atomic war, all that kind of large war. But the wars that seem to go on are the small ones. What was the one where the people were killed? What am I trying to think of?
Falkland Islands or Grenada?
Grenada. And those were people confronting people, or you know, the bomb was there, but what was it again? I'm getting lost. But there was an awareness of people, at least my understanding of it. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm not sure. But I don't know.
I think that the idea of the manipulation of the war games, even I think in World War II, you had your infantry that was looking eye to eye, but you had your officers and whatever sitting behind there thinking only of casualties, you know, it's kind of the same war games as Atari that happened in World War II too. I think war is like that. It's a risk of how can I win with sustaining as little losses as I can. And that's the same kind of idea that you have in Atari games and whatever.
Okay, you want to respond to me?
Yes. I've always thought that if you kill them, you got to eat them. And that might take care of a lot of
Well, you're speaking of later wars being impersonal. You take ever since there's been any kind of a firearm, the war has been impersonal because when you take a shot at a guy that's 400 yards away, you don't know who he is. You can't see what he looks like. You don't know what type of an individual he is at all. So as far as a war is becoming personal, or having been personal up to, let's say, World War II, that's a rather trite statement, really.
You feel that it is. Okay. Yeah. We're asking people to take responsibility for that. They say, I feel that it's a trite statement.
This is my opinion, of course.
Sure. Okay. When we add that, then it's easier for the next person to speak.
Okay.
Well,
I feel that. Okay.
Sure.
I feel that if they dealt with the atomic bomb, that would be a lot less personal.
I think most people will agree with you on that.
I feel we're not going to have an atomic war. World War II, we had very deadly gases. Were not used because they could not be controlled enough, and they were realized by the people that had them that they were just as dangerous to themselves as they were to their enemy.
Okay. Somebody else want to comment?
I find it's their atomic thing. Everybody's so stuck on this atomic thing.
Really nuclear, you mean, right?
Nuclear. Yeah. So many people be killed, stuff like that. To me, I equate it to the same thing as Every time they have an airplane crash, they report it. But every time they have a car crash, they don't report it. Why do they pick on airplanes? Every time they do it. And there's over 50,000 a year killed on the highway, and there's probably not even, 2,000 killed in airplanes.
Darwin, I think you'll find that Holden, the reports on the traffic accidents are very frequently prevention. They really are.
Traffic accidents where?
Total. I mean, the total number of people killed by automobile every year is a thing that concerns this community very much. That doesn't argue with your point at all. I'm just saying you found a place where they do pay attention to those figures here at this village. That's a very strong concern of ours. Has been.
May I ask for clarification?
Sure.
I didn't understand what you're saying.
Oh, okay. She didn't understand what you were saying between the plane and the nuclear and all.
Well, just that there's so much emphasis on nuclear war, and there's so much emphasis on flying. Like the nuclear war, there wouldn't be any emphasis unless it's death, and if there wasn't any, if there's no deaths in a plane crash, there wouldn't be any emphasis on that. It has to do with the death.
I guess she's not seeing then, my guessing is, then what's the next statement? So, then
why, are they so stuck on nuclear? Like somebody here said something about all the little wars, and they certainly got plenty of them, and they never stopped those. There's never been a day they haven't had a war. And they're killing them right and left. Over there in Cambodia, there's more killed over there than you could kill with 100 atomic bombs.
I'm not sure about that, but there are quite a few killed in Cambodia. I'm not sure that's an accurate statement.
You know, my opinion on that would be that we there's no reason to ignore the minor wars, if you can call a war a minor war. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't worry about total annihilation of the race, which is, it's my guess, as good as anyone's, I guess, might result from nuclear war.
How about Iran and Iraq? I don't see there's anybody left over there.
There is. Still lots of people. Sure. But a lot of people in the village don't get to see newspapers all the time, and I always mention once in a while. What, 8 ships sunk? In the last week, in the what's the name of the sea? I can't forget the
Persian,
the bay, the Gulf.
Persian Gulf.
Yeah, they're still at it for sure.
I think one thing that you remember about conventional warfare is that I don't think that a nuclear war would happen unprovoked from any other situation. I don't think that Russia would just invade the United States as we fear. I think that if a nuclear war would happen, it would probably stem from some other smaller conflict in some area that doesn't involve the United States or the Soviet Union directly, something like the Middle East, where something is at stake, like oil, or in Central America, where the United States is trying, and gain more territory. I think you have to have some kind of fear of that happening. You can't just say, well, you know, you don't have to worry about atomic war because it doesn't happen, won't happen. Conventional warfare is, is going on, so why worry about it? I don't think you can shove it off that easily. I think it's very connected, and that you should worry a lot about it because it could happen.
Okay. Somebody else.
I think one thing that we tend to do in our country is to project our values and our way of dealing things to other countries. Take, for example, when Iran had the hostages, you heard stories of a brother hanging the sister because she had had an affair with an American. That wouldn't happen here. The Russians shooting down that private aircraft recently, that kind of thing we wouldn't do in our country. numerous things like that that we would just not do. You know, I don't know if you could say the mentality, the way of living and dealing with things is different in other countries than here. And I think, you know, I wrestle with the idea of, you know, how much military strength should you have and how much should you, you know, try and work on at the peace table. But things are, you know, not every country deals the same. And when you have that difference, you might have conflict. And I guess I was a member of the National Guard, and they had literature that they gave of the weapons that Russia develops. They have tanks that can travel underwater and go from land and underwater and then on land again. And their tanks outnumber us something like 10 or 20 to 1. And the other kind of weapons that they have outside of nuclear weapons outnumber us also. And they're deep into chemical warfare where they, for their tests, they figure a 5% mortality rate just on their basic training is a success. I mean, they play it for keeps. So I think, you know, when you're trying to wrestle how we deal with things here and how free and open our country is, and I think, you know, we should all be grateful of that. It's different in other countries, and I think you have to try and weigh the two. And I guess I worry about the country that has the big stick or all the weapons kind of just knocking over other countries.
Okay, thank you. Someone else?
Of course, that's Russia's aim. And they have said it, they have done it, that they were going to take over the world in so many years. But they haven't done it yet. But they were going pretty good in Africa and many of those countries about 4 years ago.
Someone else?
I think there's a danger of romanticizing the U.S. versus the USSR, that we're the good guys and they're the bad guys. Because I can think of so many examples right now of, you know, the very things that he mentioned, like chemical warfare. Nerve gas is still pending in Congress right now. It was narrowly defeated a few months ago. It's still up for grabs, and invading Nicaragua, taking over, bombing towns. I mean, that to me seems to be the same tactics that he was mentioning the Russians use. And I can't see much difference in his examples of imperialism. I think we demonstrate the same kind of imperialism. You know, unstated, the same kind of aims of controlling. Not even militaristically, but I think we control economically as much as probably the USSR controls militarily.
Someone else?
As far as communism, as far as I can understand, I don't see the Soviet Union as wanting to take over the world. I see them as wanting to let the working class people have the chance to not be controlled by the capitalists, and that everybody has a share of the wealth and not just a few people. And I see the USSR as wanting that to occur so that socialism cannot.
Well, let's look at who's working class people are better off.
Just you have to be sure you address me. We're not allowing people to talk back and forth.
But no, I'm good.
Well, but see, that's part of the rules of the game. I have to stop you if you're not going to talk to me.
All right, I'll talk.
You're going to talk to me.
I wasn't looking at anybody when I was speaking that way. But let's look at who's working class people are better off. Ours, or those in Soviet Russia, or those in Poland, or in Hungary,
Can I ask you to put that in a statement? You're implying something, and it's
pretty obvious. Yes, I'm implying that the working class people in this country are much better off than they are in those countries.
Good, that's a good statement.
Yeah.
It reflects where you are. Sure.
And I've been a working man all my life. I wouldn't go to a place like that to work. I would not.
Okay, that's
Could
helpful.
I,
Thank you.
Can I say something?
Well, as long as you're talking to me.
Talking to you. I've been over in Russia, and I also agree that the working class people in America, I think, are better off. But I see the goals of Russia as to trying to get more equality between people, as for economically, as maybe a sounder goal, but it doesn't work as what they're trying to do.
Okay, thank you. Somebody else? Yeah.
After listening to conversations, I began to think, I think most peoples throughout the world are basically the same. They want a home, a place to live, feed their children, to worship how they choose to worship. I really think it's the government, because I think most people are the same. It's the elected officials and the government who make all the rules and give false information to their people or keep information from them. I would suspect that the people of Russia are not much different than we are. They just know far less. They're not told much. Oh, I'm sure they're told some things, but only what they want them to hear. But I think peoples all over the world basically want not to be hungry. They want their children to be well. And they just want to live. I think it's the governments, the big game players. You know, when there's wars, they got to take them and put them in the field, let them fight it out. Leave the average person alone. I think there'd be far less problems.
Thank you. Someone else?
I think that is an interesting statement. This has been going through all night since you mentioned Nicaragua. And 3 years ago, my cousin came back so she was there either 4 or 5 years ago, going there. And went there seeing starving children and no one taking care of them and thinking, you've got to do something about this. And sort of lack of a better word, pie in the sky, I can cure all this. Mm-hmm. And through the process of being there, she said, everybody gets to the point where it hurts. It hurts to see them. But there is so much, there's no food to give them, that you start tuning some of this out, because you're totally out of control or whatever. There's so much to deal with. And I think when you're in a situation, I mean, I think when you're speaking, you know, first world, second world, whatever, that your mentality may be pretty much the same. Your goals may be, but I think when you get down to third world and you honestly don't have enough to feed your children, that you're, you know, that's still your goal, but it's going to change your whole outlook. I don't think we've ever experienced that.
Certainly not many of us white people have.
No, and I think that, you know, abortion is sometimes an issue in our country. It is an issue. And I guess I'm very much against abortion. And yet I have people who have worked like in welfare systems and whatever and say, well, maybe there are times when abortion is appropriate. Now, I disagree with that, and yet they must obviously see situations that are bad enough for them to say that. Well, I think any situation in our country is probably 100 times better than the situations you're seeing there. And if people in our country are getting that desperate, I'm just feeling like, what's here? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
I was recently down in San Diego, and for an afternoon I went down to Tijuana. And, you know, the minute you cross the border into Mexico, you notice this huge difference. You know, you're immediately into poverty. You know, you go from what we have as being abundant wealth, where the stuff we throw out and our meals could feed a lot of people across the border. And it was really kind of discouraging, you know, that, the kind of things that they would do down there to make a living, we wouldn't even think of entertaining the way, they do almost anything to make a living. And just to survive, not make a living, just to survive.
I don't think you have to go across the border to find that.
Where do you have to go?
Well, again, you're getting into conversations. Okay, it's against the rules. I have to hold you to it. Let's wait with yours till somebody else speaks. Okay, somebody? Anybody have a comment? Sure.
Back to the subject of the celebration of Memorial Day. One of the difficulties that I would have with the celebration of Memorial Day is that it seems to lump so many things together that one does feel, or I feel, in the death of those who have, for a good reason, supported this country militarily and in other ways. Not just those that have died for the country, but those that have lived for the country. But I do have difficulty when so many things are then lumped along with it. One of the ladies over here mentioned earlier that God was connected in always, which gave it legitimacy or something. And if we were more specific about just who it is that we're honoring, that there would be more support for it. Those that maybe have difficulty with what would seem to be military aggression abroad or military action that at times seems to me to be economically oriented rather than a situation where our freedom or someone else's freedom is involved. So I think if we could break those things into more specific categories, it would have more support.
Okay, thank you. Someone else? You're surely welcome to comment now if you want to. We gave some space in between yours. I didn't mean to cut you off firmly by any means.
I was just going to say that when I found what she was in Iowa and where Baskin and everything, I know lots of people in Iowa City who, which is a very affluent town, who live in boxes and who live in the steam tunnels underneath the university, who live in cars, and who have absolutely no income for years. And there are lots of them. There's a community of about 70 who live in the steam tunnels underneath the university. And there's just so many. They're all hidden. You can't see them, but I think they're in just about every town. You can think of. You just have to look for them.
Thank you. Someone else?
I would be in favor of a plan, just occurred to me, in which if people, the government, or whoever I feel is saying that that poison gases and use of nerve gases or this specific type of weapon is unethical or it's not to be condoned, that I wish we could push the specter of the nuclear catastrophe into that same position and not be able to condone nuclear war either. This would be very beneficial to cut it off.
Okay. Thank you. Someone else?
Just a comment. Just a comment, maybe a little here, and another comment too. We seem to. There was a comment about glamorizing the Russians and us. I guess I don't feel like anything is being glamorized. It scares me.
Seems the word was romanticized.
Romanticized. Yeah.
Okay. It might be a little different.
But yeah.
Go ahead.
I guess what the point I'm trying to make is that it scares me. You know, I don't think anybody wants a war. I don't think anybody wants a nuclear war, or even just a skirmish. You know, it's all serious, and people's lives are at stake. And I guess you get involved in a lot of governments playing back and forth, and kind of the idea that we have to take over this or protect this, and it's a very hard issue to deal with, you know.
Thank you.
Another thing hit me as you were mentioning the lumping everything together in the celebration. And to me, the celebration is in the eyes of the beholder, or whatever you want to say, and you can compare it to any other festival we have. And recently, just this past week, so this is real fresh in my mind, a friend of mine was talking about a neighbor who will not celebrate Christmas because she thinks it's totally paganistic. Mm-hmm. And as a child, she was brought up, and Christmas was a paganistic celebration. She was not Christian. She had no idea that it was a celebration of Christ's birth. And that's here in the United States. Well, you know, and I can remember a time period going through setting my own value systems and feeling like, oh, I'm really against all the gifts, I'm against all this and that, and wanting to shove my value system on the rest of my family, my parents, whatever. And I think you mellow out. I think you start mellowing out after a while. And in a way, you know, just going back to the Christmas, you know, to say my parents couldn't give my children the gifts that they wanted, that's taking away part of their right as grandparents. And I think going back to Memorial Day, I mean, as a child, I didn't realize that the whole celebration even had to do with wars, because my mother, I mean, we visited the cemeteries. It was there was a cleanup committee at an old cemetery kind of on the hillside that's just, there's no added to whatever you want to say. And I mean, it was a family time also. It was a time to remember our roots, where we came from, our ancestors who had gone before us. And I really think it's what you want to make it. I don't think that we have to decide and force our value system on everybody else around us. Like what you do is contagious. I mean, just your existence is contagious, and so your being is.
Thank you. Someone else? Got time for one more? We said we'd close at 9:15.
Well, what she's saying, that's one of the privileges we have because we live in the United States.
Okay. We'll let that close, and we invite you to stay if you want to sit and talk and do more. One of the goals, I hope that you understand, is to allow the kind of conversation to go on that was going on. I know it's stilted. There are values in just talking at each other back and forth. Our experience has been that when some of that happens, that often less is said and less is helpful than when you take some time and do it in a way that allows for people to be respected as they say something. We can do both kinds here at Holy. You know, we aren't tied down. I think we're an experimental place, and we can do all kinds of things. But if you have opinions about how to do some forums and that, pass them along. We'd be delighted for it, because we're heading into a summer, and we'll be glad to do some in different ways. But just so you get the feeling that what we were after tonight is to let people with differing points of views and different perspectives really be heard, and have a right to say, you know, whatever they want to say, and other people respond and think about it, or toss it away, or whatever else. I hope that it was helpful in that respect. You're also welcome to stay, as I said, and continue to visit on the subject or otherwise. Have a good evening.